I'm Elliot Forrest, in for Leonard Lope today. Lawrence Schiller is a New York Times bestselling author, photographer, and film director. But when he met Marilyn Monroe, he was only 23 years old and still an up-and-coming photographer. In his new memoir, Marilyn and Me, Schiller recounts his brief but memorable time with the star. His book is published by Doubleday. Lawrence Schiller, welcome to our show today.
Thank you. It's the first time I've ever done a New York radio show. I was born in Brooklyn, raised, lived in California for 40 years, came back. And I've been on lots of television. This is the first time I've been in New York radio.
Well, welcome, a radio virgin.
Well, thank you.
You met Marilyn Monroe in 1960 when Look magazine asked you to photograph her on the set of the film Let's Make Love.
Right.
How was photographing Marilyn different from the shots you'd already done, even at that young age?
Well, you have to remember that Marilyn at that point had been photographed by every great photographer in the world. Alfred Eisenstadt from Life magazine, Richard Avedon, the great advertising photographer, Arnold Newman. I mean, really, really scared, you know.
With us now is Lawrence Schiller. I think we've had a little bleep there. See, that's the difference in radio.
I get it.
All right. Okay.
I was scared.
Perfect. Right? Thank you.
Okay. I was scared. So the short and long of it is she had been photographed by every single photographer in the world. Richard Avedon, Arnold Newman, Milton Green, Alfred Eisenstadt from Life. And here I was, 23. Yes, I had photographed some celebrities. Lee Remick, I'd done Anatomy of a Murder, some movies. I'd photographed sports people. I'd photographed some kings and queens, some murderers.
So why did she scare you?
Well, I mean, you know, like she was a legend. And, you know, Konrad Adenauer, you know, the Chancellor of Germany, who I photographed like a month before her, he wasn't a legend. I mean, here's the man who was shaping Germany into the modern world, and yet he didn't have that stature of being Marilyn Monroe. So when I was introduced to her on the set of Let's Make Love, and she turned around with a smile, hearing I was from Look magazine, and said, "Hi, I'm Marilyn." I was so scared, I said, "Oh, I'm the big bad wolf." I didn't know what else to say. And she kind of looked at me and she said, "Well, how old are you? You look kind of young to be that bad." And you might think I'm making up the dialogue, but, you know, I ran home that night and I told my wife, so my wife remembered it more than I did. So when I wrote this memoir, I kept on calling Judy. What did I say? And it was really very interesting because Marilyn at that point, I think, started to relate to people that didn't have agendas in their lives with her because she was unknown to all of us at the lower nadir of the arc of her life, you know? And eventually tragedy, you know, comes into her life. So I just started, you know, like just who I was. And then like 15 minutes later, she invited me into her dressing room and I was actually scared. I stood at the door photographing her. I didn't know what to do.
Right. Should you go in? Should you not?
Yeah. You know, how far do you venture into this private world?
The dressing room? What will she be wearing? The whole thing.
The whole thing. And she catches me in the mirror. She's having her hair done by a woman I learned to be Gladys later on. And she says, "You're not going to get a good picture from there. Now, if you go over there, you'll really get a good picture." So I kind of sheepishly go over there in the corner. And she turns over her shoulder and gives me one look. And I raise the 105-millimeter lens on the Nikon. And I got to tell you, there's only one frame on my roll. It's $1 million. Marilyn knew how to deliver when she wanted to do. She knew more about photography, as I say in the memoir, than I did, and I think more than most of the photographers have photographed her.
We're going to put some of your pictures on our show page for people to be able to see them. When did you first pick up the camera?
I was actually about 13, 14 years old. I was given my first camera for my bar mitzvah.
Mazel tov.
And I had a bicycle, and I don't know why, but I chased automobile accidents. But by the time I got there, there were no cars anymore, and the police had left, and all there was left was skid marks. And I would photograph the skid marks, and I'd sell them to insurance companies. And I made enough money to buy my first car at 16, which was a Ford. And I got to tell you, I was so proud of myself that for the first 3 or 4 years, I became an expert. But really, it taught me a lot more. It taught me about business. It taught me about lighting. I learned about back lighting, side lighting, front lighting. You know, a skid mark looks entirely different depending upon the lighting. So those years were very formative as much in business as they were in photography.
You and Marilyn spent just 3 days together on the set of Let's Make Love. You didn't work again for another 2 years right. on the film Something's Gotta Give in 1962. Did she remember you?
She did. It was very, very funny. You know, I was hired now by Paris Match magazine, the big French magazine, and Life. I had advanced myself career-wise where I was all over the world. I'd already won a photographic picture of the year for the National Press Photographers and lots of things. So she was going to do this movie, and by then I understood that publicity was so important for studios. So I asked for the script. You know, I want to see what are the best scenes. I could pick the days I wanted to go. And obviously there was this swimming pool scene in this script, which had so many colored pages, had been rewritten God knows how many times by how many writers. So the short and long of it, she invited me out to her house through the press agent, and she's playing around with tiles on the floor. I didn't realize she was redecorating her kitchen. And, you know, and she says, can I borrow your one good eye? Well, you know, her press agent turned around and said, well, what's your one good eye? And, of course, that goes back to another story in 1960, because on the second day of shooting, she notices that I don't close my left eye when I'm shooting. And she turns and she says, well, all the photographers close their left eye when they're shooting. Why don't you? And I said, because I'm almost totally blind in my left eye. I had an accident when I was a child. And, of course, that opened up a whole conversation about childhood. You know, how do you get damaged in childhood? She was really interesting because she'd been in an orphanage. So back in going back to 62.
So 2 years later, she remembered this.
She remembered it. She says, can I borrow your one
good eye?
And that was her opening line to me. I mean, it was.
That's very sweet.
Yeah. I mean, so she was always that way. But there was something else happening. At that point in her life, she seemed to only want to be photographed by younger photographers than she was. Doug Kirkland was 27. Bert Stern was younger than her. I was, you know, 25 when I photographed her the second time. And if you really look at the photographers, George Barris, that took her and she had relationships with, I don't mean sexually, but I mean personally, in the last year of her life, they were all young guys. And guys that had an ingenue feeling to them. And it was really interesting. I think she was a very, very smart woman. She had run out of tools, weapons to use in fighting the studios to gain recognition the way she felt she should be recognized. And none of us knew, obviously, that, you know, one day we'd wake up and Marilyn wouldn't be with us.
I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate today. The guest is Lawrence Schiller. He is an author, photographer, filmmaker. His new book is called Marilyn and Me. At one point on the set of Something's Gotta Give, you knocked on Marilyn's dressing room door. She didn't answer. You write that you thought she was there. What was the story there? Why wouldn't she let you in?
Well, number one, Marilyn was very kind of funny because if she wanted you to come in, the door would have a crack in it, slightly open, and that meant you could knock but open the door almost automatically. Now it was really tight. And I think the incident you may be referring to is when I just slightly turn away and I hear this screaming inside. And she was just livid at 20th Century Fox, the studio. I don't know the real reason, but she was using, you know, language that we wouldn't want to repeat on radio here.
Thank you.
She was just going at it. And eventually the door opens and Whitey Snyder, her makeup guy, comes out and says, well, what do you want for lunch? And I'm going to get lunch. And she was just kind of like calming herself down. Look, she was getting paid $100,000 to do these movies under a contract. Liz Taylor at the same time was doing Cleopatra, getting $1 million. And, you know, on the front
did she
page,
know the discrepancy?
Yes, she did. Everybody knew.
How did it make her feel?
Well, it made her feel, I think, in some ways, impotent. I mean, she just felt worthless. She just felt useless. She just felt that she wasn't acknowledged. At one point in a conversation when we're talking about recognition, and I say to her, well, you know, you're already a big star, Marilyn, et cetera. And there's another funny story to that. She turns around and says, well, how many Oscar nominations do you think I got? You know, where she knew at the same time, Anna Magnani's making a film, Gregory Peck's making this film. I mean, the great films are being made. And, you know, Marilyn Monroe's on the covers of magazines, and she's only getting $100,000. This really hurt her.
Marilyn was always known for being late on the set, but you recount a very famous day, May 17th, 1962. She was very much on time for that day. What happened later that day?
Well, there were a couple days when she was really on time because she wanted to accomplish something more than just the filming of the day. Why was Marilyn late? Let's address that issue first very quickly. And that is that she was a method actress. And I think she had extreme difficulty submerging herself into the myth of the role to become that character. She wasn't like Laurence Olivier, where you can turn a light switch on and off. And there,
get the nose right and the character's there.
Exactly right. So Marilyn, that's number one. Number two, she was always fighting these demons at night. Night was a safe haven, a harbor in which she escaped to. Emotional problems. She'd been in Payne Whitney Mental Hospital months before DiMaggio had taken her out. So she's fighting those demons. Insecure in front of the motion picture camera, okay? The still camera she had total control over. She could approve or kill any picture she wanted. The motion picture camera, no control, all right? Now, why was she on time that day? Because Marilyn had made up her mind that she wanted to be on the cover of every magazine in the world, that she was going to jump into a swimming pool with a bathing suit on. As the script said, she would wear a newt bathing suit, but she was going to come out with nothing on. And that she had discussed with me maybe a week before. I think she had discussed it with the director, obviously, and other people in her entourage. I had joked with her and said, you know, Marilyn, you're already famous. Now you're going to make me famous. And she looked at me like, you know, what is this cocky kid talking about? And then she said, you know, photographers like you, Larry, could easily be replaced. I mean, she got to the point when she wanted to. But that day, she was like a 16-year-old kid. It was like there wasn't a worry in her life. She came out, you know, in this blue Terry Korth bathrobe. There were two of us on the set, Billy Woodfield and myself, shooting pictures authorized by her. And, you know, she jumped in the swimming pool, paddled around, came up. The movie cameras would change. She would pose specifically for pictures the way we wanted. And, you know, little by little, she took the bra off eventually. Little by little, she then took her underpants off, the bottom part of the bathing suit. And she was there, you know, all in her birthday suit. And, of course, as she wanted, she was on the cover of every magazine in the world 2 weeks later, and you couldn't find Liz Taylor.
You talk about her insecurity, but you also portray her as a shrewd businesswoman and strong opinions about self-promotion and the Bay of Pigs. Why do we not know that much about that side of her?
Well, I think the biographers, and I'm not putting any of them down because Donald Spotto has written a great book, and Francis Giles wrote the first, and of course my colleague and close friend Norman Mailer wrote a biography, which became a bestseller. I think everybody looked at the obvious, the image that was on the screen, the image of divorce, you know, the perception of what she was, the struggle. But, you know, you're not often around. Now, I was a businessman. I was probably more a businessman than a photographer. So I saw the business side of her. I saw the calculating side because, in essence, I became a partner with her without a written contract.
This month is the 50th anniversary of Marilyn's death. You visited her at her home the day before she died. Can you describe that visit?
Well, the pictures that appeared in Life and all over the world were taken in May and appeared around June 12th or 19th. After that, Marilyn had agreed that certain pictures could be sold to Playboy magazine. And Hugh Hefner wanted her to pose for a cover of the magazine. You realize that her whole career had really started with the first cover of Playboy magazine, I think 1952 or 1953. So now we're looking at it 10 years later in 63. And, of course, Hefner would love to have her on the cover again. So I was negotiating with her. Hefner had written a personal letter to her, and I received a phone call from her press representative who said Marilyn's decided not to do the Playboy cover. But I didn't believe Pat Newcomb. So I went out to the house unannounced on the morning of August 4th. And there she was outside, looked a little upset. I think she was waiting for somebody. The history now says she was waiting for her masseuse. I think I probably pushed her a little too far that morning. I said, come on, you know, are we going to do this? Are we not? And then all of a sudden she turns on me, as I write in the memoir, and says, Everybody just wants me for my body. That's all there is. You know, why can't people accept me otherwise? And I knew I had to get the hell out of there. Marilyn was using the only weapon she had left at that point in her life, and that was her body. And sadly, she had used up all the other weapons that one uses when you negotiate with motion picture studios, when you advance your career, when you try to prove you're as good or better than somebody else. The next morning, I woke up to the news that Marilyn had died.
Did you have any sense that day that that would be her last 24 hours?
No, there was no sense at all. She looked disturbed, but I'm 25 years old. I didn't have the experience in life. I hadn't been run over by enough trucks in my life yet to understand the subtleties. I think if it was facing me, I wouldn't have realized it. I was totally wrong, as I write, because I was only interested in Larry Shuler.
We've only got about 30 seconds left. Your last memory, your lasting memory to this day of Marilyn Monroe?
I think it was of a girl that always wanted to be a child, who always saw Norma Jean in the mirror, the person that she grew up with. Marilyn Monroe was a creation that was put upon her for fame and fortune.
I've been speaking with Lawrence Shiller about his memoir, Marilyn and Me, A Photographer's Memories, which is published by Nan A. Talis, an imprint of Doubleday. And he'll be speaking tomorrow night at 7 at the Strand Bookstore. That's at 828 Broadway at 12th Street. You can see a slideshow of some of the photos of Marilyn Monroe on our show page. Larry, thanks for joining us today on your first day on New York Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.